Good morning, everyone. Hi, how was spring break?
That's awesome. Wow. Hello. 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 Anyway. So how is spring break? You guys good? Excited?
All right.
You have a question?
No.
Just kidding. So last time we started the pipelining. This was before spring break. So let's refresh it a little. So what was this pipelining idea? We remember we looked at this analogy with the laundry, that we have a washing machine and a dryer, and it's faster if we keep all the stages busy. That's the whole idea, right? We want to keep the stages of the process busy. So for example, register file, if we pass the register indexes to read, and then we pass the values to the ALU and then to the memory, after the register file gave us the values, it's done. It's not doing anything. It's just holding those values for the other stages to do the work. So if we pipeline, the idea is that we can send new indexes to read. So we can work faster at each stage and get higher throughput. So keep busy every stage and get higher throughput. We did look at also at latency and throughput, and it turns out that, you know, for one cycle, for one ISA, for one instruction, we do have higher latency, several clock cycles. We have these registers, pipeline registers, that also take some latency as well, add some latency. But we do get higher throughput in that. We looked at how we cannot keep pipelining to infinity. There is a diminishing return. Ideas to keep in mind of. So we can only run as fast as the slowest stage, unless we have different clocks. So each stage would run at its own clock cycle. Then I guess we could make it faster, but we don't really do that. So there is one clock that drives all the stages, so each of the five stages or so. And if one stage is slow, then all of them will be somewhat slow, right? And then we cannot really divide something like the ALU exactly evenly. We cannot really divide the multiplier or an adder or some more complex logic right down the middle in terms of time. It's a circuit after all. And adding registers, a register itself will have a latency, the time it takes to read and to write into a register. It also adds area. So it impacts, you know, our cost and our performance. We started with circuits, pipelining circuits. So basically we agreed that we can achieve this by inserting registers between the stages. So that one stage will send a value to the other stage via a register, a pipeline register. And then we looked at this HCL convention. How do we implement this in HCL RS? That we have the naming convention, lowercase and uppercase letters. For example, fetch, lowercase f, and then decode, uppercase d, and so on for all of them. And then we had a quiz due today, and I looked at some of the results, and most of you did really well. However, there were a few caveats. Some questions seemed to need a bit of discussion. So at question one, about 14 or 15% selected that that statement is true, and it is not true. So that piece, the program counter register, is a 64-bit register, that's correct, that is always incremented by the number of bytes in the current instruction. So I guess the confusion was the word incremented, maybe, or just the understanding of the program counter was incorrect, because we do increment it most of the time. However, for some instructions, such as when we jump or when we do a call or a return, we set the program counter to a specific value. So we don't just increment by the number of bytes. We set it to a specific value. So that's a difference. So it's not always like that. Question two. Again, this statement is not correct. And I specifically wanted to include a statement like that so that, you know, people that still think this is true will make the mistake and then maybe we'll learn. So I hope that, you know, now it's like going to be super clear, because, you know, you get a penalty out of it. Look, the instruction memory, register file, and data memory are, like, especially register file is its own thing. It's its own circuit, its own mechanism. It's not part of the instruction memory or data memory. The register file is separate transistors on the chip. It's not the same as, it's not together with the cache. It's separate. So if you write to the data memory, you cannot read that same value from the register file. You know, it's not there. It's not in the register file unless you put it. The condition code's values update every time the output of the ALU changes. This is also false, right? And this you've seen this also in the previous lab on homework. The condition codes update only when the operation is an arithmetic operation. So if there are other operations, you know, the ALU, there will be, the ALU values will update, for example, when we calculate the memory address. We still use the ALU, but we don't update the condition codes. And, you know, other times as well, a knock or a jump. So only the condition codes only update during arithmetic operations. Yeah. And then the last one, more students got this answer instead of the first one. But the first one is correct. So the latency, that's actually, okay. So the only difference is this part here, right? Because the other part is the same. It's 805 times, which is 5 times 800. So the total latency before was, there were three stages, and two of them were 2,000 picoseconds, the latency. But then why would this be 1,000? So if we would have a separate clock that would drive that stage at, well, twice the speed, then that might be true. But we don't. I mean, that's not the case. So they all run with the same clock. So in this class, we learned that we are as slow as the slowest stage. We are always as slow as the slowest stage.
Because
we have only one clock. So even if the value is ready, it will not be read by the next stage.
Yeah. But because I saw it on slides, the wasted time for the last day is not coming with the latest. So.
Yeah.
So just the slowest day.
Yes. Yeah, it is like that. Yes, please.
Can you explain the calculations for latency?
Okay, yeah. Should I do that best? So explain the calculations for latency and throughput. Okay, maybe I go here. So we have, at first we have three stages, right? There is the PC always, the program counter. And then the first stage is fetch. Oh.
I forgot what it was, like decode plus execute and memory plus write back. I don't know what's going on. So the latency will be, say you pass one instruction through all five of them. So one instruction will start here. There will be the first stage latency, which will be like a thousand picoseconds. And then this was mentioned to be 2000. So the second stage, 2000 picoseconds, and then another 2000. And in between, we have pipeline registers. There's one here, and say one here. Giving me issues today. All right. So each of these will be 100, was it? Or mind. I think my machine just decided not to be responsive. so the total latency will be the sum of these times, right? And then for the five stage pipeline, we will each 2000 we're splitting them exactly in the middle, so that's 1000, and it's 20% less, so that's 800. That's why we have 800, 800, 800, 800, and the first one also becomes 800. And then for the pipeline registers, we'll have more of them because we're adding more pipeline registers. So instead of three, we'll have five, I believe. And those will be, instead of 100, will be 50. So at first will be 100, and then after optimization, it'll be 50. And so the latencies all add up, and that's where that ratio comes from. Now for the throughput, the number of stages doesn't really matter, right? For the throughput, we are only concerned with the one slowest stage. Yeah, because that will keep us that will keep all the other stages waiting. So like in that example with the laundry, if the dryer is the slowest, if it takes longest to dry, then, well, since we only have one dryer, we have to put the laundry in the water machine to wait. So that was, that's how the throughput works. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Is it not the sum of the times? The clock is moving together.
So it's 2000. The 1000. That was my mistake. So the 1000 picosecond will actually run slower. So even though the latency there is 1000, we cannot run it at 1000.
So we can use the latency
as 3 times 2000. 3 times 2000. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, thanks for catching. Yeah.
So latency is a song source.
Yes, but the latency, just so that I don't make the mistake again, the latency is the sum, but all the stages will run, will take as long as the slowest stage. Yeah, I don't want to make the mistake again. Yeah. Yeah, let me try to figure out why my computer decided to not listen to me. Well, something happened.
Download it and then open it. Does the same F11 work? Robust document. No, sorry. That's a bad idea. Did I just mess it up again?
I
don't know. I pressed F11. Okay. Maybe let's not do that.
So just, I think command plus probably.
Oh, yeah. And that.
Okay.
Sorry for technical difficulties.
Ooh, yeah.
We're just possibly treated.
Yeah, shame Microsoft. Long live Apple. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I asked one market back from the quiz for throughput, and then in lecture we talked about the throughput being like one over the slowest construction time plus register time.
Yeah.
Times of bounding. So if it's one over the time, wouldn't the ratio be flipped from what the correct answer was?
Wait, I think
I would it be? I remember.
I noticed like answer that none of the options were correct. I think we weren't careful about or directing the ratio.
Yeah, we might have we might have missed that that detail. Yeah.
I think
so one over, yeah. Yeah, thanks for checking that, for catching that. So today I want to talk about data hazards. It's when you start pipelining, you run into issues, and it's quite interesting. So let's observe this scenario where we have this program. We are adding R8 with R9, storing it in R9, and then R9 to R8 and storing it in R8. Let's see how that works in terms of a timeline. And here is on the right side we have the pipeline, the implementation of this add computer, add processor. So in the first clock cycle we will fetch the first instruction, the program counter will be zero, and at time one will be in the fetch decode stage we will pass these indexes 8 and 9, and so 8 and 9 will be passed right here, right? 8 and 9. Okay. The values of 8 and 9 are 800 and 900. So at time two, we will be getting values, the values right here, right? 800 and 900, right there, into this register. At the same time, because it's a pipelined implementation, at time one, the PC will be incrementing. So at time two, we will be beginning to execute the next instruction, R9, add with R8, and store in R8. And notice there's a dependency there. The value in R9, which should be the sum, R8 plus R9, which is 1,700, the value is not yet computed. So the value at this time at 2 is still 800 and 900. And that's a problem, right? Right here, at this time here, sorry. At the time 3, the value is still 900 and 800. So that's what it will be reading. And so that value there should be 1,700. And that's a hazard. That's what we call a data hazard. When the next instruction depends on the value of a previous instruction, and that value is not yet ready, and it starts using whichever value is already in the register file. So it's doing the wrong computation. It's doing the wrong work. And in more details, if you look at the ISA specification, what does the ISA tell us about this program? It says first read R8 and R9 and add them and write the result in R9. And then read R9 and R8 and add them all, and then write the result in R8. But what we do is we read R8 and R9, and immediately after we read R9 and R8. And then we write in R9, but then we write the wrong thing for R8 because we read the wrong values. So we execute a different program, a different program. Is this clear? Are we on the same page about what's going wrong? Okay, so how can we mitigate this? And one option is, please go ahead.
So is the reason why it reads the older value just because the register is used in pipeline?
Let's look again at this timeline. I think I should explain it much better. So the first instruction is being fetched and decoded. So the register indexes that we are using is 8 and 9, which have the values 800 and 900. And so far, that's it at this time. At the next cycle, what's going on is now this stage, which is the fetch stage, will fetch the next instruction, which is add R9 and R8. So this will become the new indexes. Meanwhile, the register file, which is the decode stage, right? This is the decode stage. It already had the values 8 and 9 before. They were stored here in these registers, in this pipeline registers. And now it's outputting the values 800 and 900. And it's passing these values right there for the ALU. Notice that the adder hasn't yet done anything. But at the next time, at the next clock cycle, cycle 3. The values that the register file outputs are what is there in the register file. And we have not updated the register file values yet. We haven't even done the addition. So we're now only doing the addition. 1,700 comes here. So it 00, and it goes in this write back registers right there, right? We are only now doing the addition, but they are not yet even passed as inputs to the register file. They're just there at the register, at the pipeline registers. So what's going on is we're passing the wrong values to this pipeline registers at this time. These values, they are the old values that were in the register file. They're not the new values. And that is the problem. Yeah.
Okay.
So it should be 1,700, yet we are reading a 900, and we have to mitigate that. And one way to mitigate it is to do it all at the compiler. So when we are writing assembly code, or when the compiler generates the program, the ISA will specify, this is a pipeline implementation of a processor. The following instruction takes this many clock cycles. Therefore, if there's a dependency, make sure that you insert some knob operations. And that will work. So we could do add and then two knobs and then another add. So during those knobs, the computation will go from register values to ALU to write back stage. The value will be updated in the register, and then we can proceed with the next. So for this, we have to change the ISA, and it's more tedious to actually write the assembly. And the biggest problem is actually that for every processor, you have to recompile. So if you maybe copy an executable on a USB stick and put it in a different machine, it might not work. It will probably not work because it's a different processor. So for every processor, there has to be a processor specification that gets fed into the compiler. It's a good option. Sometimes this is actually what's happening, but I don't think we're going to be happy with this option, right? We want things to be more cross-compatible with machine to machine. And ideally, we want the hardware to take care of it and maybe to actually not always pay the price of two knobs, right? So let's look at the hardware solution. Can we have a hardware solution for this? For example, the hardware will detect that there is a dependency, and the dependency actually leads into a hazard, the data hazard, and it will insert these knobs on its own. The hardware will have a mechanism to do that. How to do that? For example, preserve the value of the program counter. So don't change the program counter value and put knobs. So actually set the value of the instruction that's passed to F, to knob. Okay. Questions about compiler versus hardware? I mean, we're going to go further into hardware. Yeah. Yeah. So if we mitigate the data hazard using a compiler, if this is a single cycle processor, like we had before, no pipelining, then there is no data hub. If a processor is implemented with a, say, three-stage pipeline, then the hazard will be only one clock cycle. So we'll need one knob. If we have five stages, we will need two knobs or three. So you see, it depends on the implementation of the processor. So there are different processors. Therefore, we have to always compile a program specifically for a processor implementation. Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you. Good question. Let's also look at this example. We are adding R8 with R9 into R9. Then we are doing a hardware stall twice. So how do we do this hardware stall? By the way, by stall, what I mean is that the PC, we don't increment it, we insert this knob. What we just mentioned here, this stalling, this red lines here, yeah, this is what stalling is. So we're doing this stall twice, and then we have R9 plus R8, and it should work because we stalled, right? And then we do R10 plus R11. How do we stall? So there will be some logic here in the processor, in the PC program counter update. There will be some specific logic that takes care of that. So what is the cost? And if you look at the time, we're propagating these bubbles. We have six clock cycles, and we always have, you know, two of the the stage fetch decode is not doing any work for two clock cycles. And then this other stage, decode execute, the registers at that one, at that stage also, we don't do any work for two clock cycles and so on. So that's what, that's how it looks like in terms of, execution, how the data and the program update through the pipeline registers and through our stages and in terms of also clock cycles. And this meets the result. So we end up inserting these knob bubbles, and once we insert one, it has to propagate through the stages, through all the stages. And
so the solving is just giving the system more time to complete its operation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the stalling is giving the system more time. You could think of it that way, or you could think of it as the stalling makes sure that the value we need will go into the location where we actually need to access it from. For example, register file, right? So we need to execute an instruction that needs a value that's not yet ready in the location where it needs to be read. It can be in memory, it can be in register file. So the value is not yet ready. You go ahead.
Would this not work if there is the hardware installed once?
Yes. Would this not work if we only install one time, if we only set one knob? So let's see what happens in that case, right? So we fetch and decode. So we pass the value 8 and 9 to the register files. So the register as indexes right here. I'm going to use the annotate. So we pass 8 and 9 over there. And at the next clock cycle 2, we get these values, 800 and 900. When we get them right there. If we only insert one knob, then at this time, here, we will pass 9 and 8. And then right here, we will be getting the values from the register file. And those values are still 800 and 900. This 1,700, it's still in the right back. It's right here. It hasn't yet gone into the register file. So it needs another clock cycle. And that's the problem. So we will see a lot of dependencies, but not every dependency is a hazard, right? A hazard is when there is a dependency and actually we end up using the incorrect value. So the value is that we're actually doing the wrong work. So a hazard is before extra work is done to resolve the hazard. So far, we looked at data hazard. There will be more hazards, but the idea is that not every dependency is actually a hazard. There are dependencies, but maybe there will be many, many instructions in between, and the dependency will fix themselves. Actually, that's another option to solve this, right? When we looked at compiler, compiler solution, we inserted knobs, but imagine that we have a longer program, and there are other instructions that are completely not related with this. Say we're working with register 1, 2, 3, 4, 11, 12. Then we could just maybe rearrange. Instead of knob, just execute some other instructions that don't break anything. So that's another solution, right? And then we turn into a hazard, just into a dependency. When we see a dependency, we have to actually check, is it actually a hazard? So we have to look at the pipeline, the time, and observe, oh, this value is actually stuck in the memory stage or in the execute stage, and it's not yet in the register file, therefore we cannot use it yet. So we have to do the work to identify that. And let's actually do that work in this one exercise. So we have this program, and we have the computer on the right side, and yeah, we're adding R8 into R9, R10 into R11. Then we see that there is a dependency, R9. We are using R9. And again, we're using R11. Okay. So to resolve data hazards with stalling, how many stalls are needed? So the question is, how many stalls do we need to insert in this program in order to not have a data hazard? So please talk it among yourselves. You have a question? No? Try to complete this timeline and figure out how many knobs we have to insert. So how many stalls we have to insert in order to fix the hazard.
So what do you got?
Need more time? You can take your time. Okay, so who thinks we need zero knobs? Anyone thinks one knob will do? Okay, two knobs. Okay, so we have three knobs. No clue. Okay, so let's do it together. So the first, for the first instruction, we just go ahead and it just goes through the stages of the computer, right? So it does fetch, decode, execute, and write. Then for the second instruction, the fetch stage is now available. So we do fetch, then the decode is available, and our values R10 or R11 are available, meaning that there's no dependency. So we can do decode here. Then we can execute. So the...
Why are those changes?
Okay, and then we write it back. So next, R9 and R8. R9 depends on the value here, and ideally we want it to be already written back, right? We want it to be there, and it's not available yet. But can we fetch? We can fetch, right? The fetch stage is available, so we can fetch. Then can we decode? So we can't really decode because the value is not ready in the register file. So if we pass the register indexes, we're gonna get the wrong values out, and we don't want to do that. So we have to insert stall, or we could think of it as we remain in fetch. And then our value is ready, is available at this clock cycle 4. So we can proceed further with the decode and execute and write. Okay. And now for R11, R10. R11 is right there. So there's a dependency. We were writing it. And this is the time when R11 will be ready, right here. So can we fetch at this time? We cannot fetch here because the fetch stage is busy with a different instruction. So we have to start here, fetch. And then our value R11 is available, so we can do decode, execute, and write. So it's true, we only needed one. We only needed one stall. Questions? Is this? Yeah.
How do you know when testing is in any stage of busy?
So at this time, for example, right here, in this clock cycle 3, I wanted to fetch, but there is already an instruction in that stage, right? This instruction is in the fetch. So it's busy. The instruction, the fetch stage is busy with this, fetching this instruction at R9, R8. Okay. You don't seem convinced. What's troubling you?
So when it's the fetch stage, the R9 and R8 in the fetch stage, that's how it's busy. How do you know whether they are not in just like, for example, in the second line, R10 and R11? Like we can just do. It's to
R9. We cannot fetch two instructions in the same clock cycle, right? Because we only have one fetch stage. We cannot fetch two instructions in the same clock cycle.
Okay. Anna, what's up? I just want to
Understand. So are you assuming that each stage takes approximately the same amount of time?
One clock cycle. Sorry. Oh, yeah, one clock cycle. I mean, it's all driven by one clock.
Okay. And so the way we find the number of stalls is by if each stage is busy, not by whether something is still being done or not.
So think back to the laundry analogy, right? We have laundry to do, and you have washing machine, dryer, folding table, right? So if the dryer is busy, then you know we cannot take the clothes from the washing machine and put them in the dryer because the dryer is busy, it's drying. So the same in this case, right? If, say our decode or our execute or our write back. So there are two limits here, right? One of them is the data written back into the register file? And the other one is our unit ready? Is the fetch ready, the stage ready? And I mean, the one about ready, I think it's less of a concern at this point. It's the main concern here was, is the data, where's the data? So we're trying to fix the data hazard, right? So the main concern here was, is this data available? So R9 was ready here and R11 was ready at that time. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, so this doesn't have to really be a fetch, but ideally, it you know nothing prevents us from actually fetching this instruction. You know, fetching an instruction is physically reading a value, the program counter value passed to the address memory, to the instruction memory, passes an address to the instruction memory. So physically, there's nothing wrong with doing that. What's wrong is that you know. Actually giving this register values to the register file and continuing with that. Because you know we will end up taking the wrong values out of the register files. So that's like the data hazard. So we can fetch, but you know, we should not do anything in the next one, but do nothing is equivalent with doing the same thing. You know, so a knob. So we could have done nothing here. Just say we're doing a knob, a bubble, right? We're doing a knob, and then a fetch. So that's equivalent. Yeah.
Then because we put the knob there, it usually sits for a
number. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so in this case, what saves us is that we have an instruction that is independent. There is no dependency between these two instructions, right? And that instruction actually acts as the first knob, we would need to have two knobs if the dependency would be right after. But because there is no dependency right after, then you know. Okay. I'm gonna clear and move forward. Yeah. So there is the solution on the slide. Oh, go ahead.
So basically, the stage it's on is determined by which, like, where it's on, it, which intermediate register it's on.
One more time, please.
So the stage it's on, whether it's fetch, decode, execute, or write back, is dependent on which register the values are in, basically.
Which register the values are in? I would say if the value in the register file is the correct one, the one that should be there, it's the final, the computed one, then you know we're good to proceed. Otherwise, there's a hazard. That's the way to think about it. So in this case, we didn't fetch twice. In this solution, we have an op, just that acts there. So we don't do anything in that one clock cycle.
So we notice that we can stall, and by stalling, we are fixing the data hazard, but we always have to pay a price in terms of some knobs, some clock cycles that you know nothing happens in them. So our throughput decreases, right? So there's these bubbles. There is this no action propagated through our pipeline, and maybe we can do better than that. And if you think a bit about it, like, do we have the value? You know, so do we have the value that we need? Why are we inserting a knob? We're inserting a knob because we want that value to be in the register file. But is that value maybe available somewhere else? And it turns out that it actually is. So that value that should be 1,700 is located right here where the blue dot is. So that's the result from the ALU. And we want that value to be passed to this pipeline register that is between the register file and the ALU, so between the decode and the execute. So currently the value comes from the register file, but what if we take it from here? Does this make sense? So instead of inserting a knob, we detect this data hazard. And when that data hazard is detected, we mitigate it by, you know, always realizing, okay, that value that we want is not yet passed into the register file, but it's on its way there. So let's take it from the register, from the pipeline register. What's up? Yeah.
You're probably gonna get into this, but wouldn't it be to know when to do that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we'll get into that. So the timing is very important. When do we do this? So we have to detect the L.
Why is this
Yeah. So why is it? So if we do this, we don't have to insert a knob. We don't have to stall. That is the advantage. And while with the other scenario, when we stall, we insert this no operation, so we slow down the entire throughput. So how comes that we don't stall? So if you look at this timeline with the stages and the cycles, right? For the first instruction, we fetch, we decode, we pass the values to the execute, and then we execute. And lagging behind it, just one clock cycle behind it, the next instruction happens, right? We fetch, we decode. And the register file gives us these values, 900 and 800. So while we already computed the result of the previous two registers, the next two are coming here. So that is the case, right? Because the instructions are one after another. So we'll have 1,700 right there. And we'll have the wrong values, 800 and 900, 900 and 800. We'll have them right here in this place. And if we only fix, if we only change that, so if we take this value from this wire, this register ideally, right? If we take it from here and put it there, then, you know, we can mitigate this. And this is what we call forwarding. So we're forwarding the value from where we actually have it. It's not from the register file, but it's from the pipeline, from somewhere in the pipeline. And it can be here, it can be this other value, right? This is the destination. So this might be necessary, the destination sometimes. And it can also be from after So we have now a way to control time. There was a question about time, right? If it's 1 clock cycle, one after another, then the value will clearly be from this location here. It's right the next value. But what if there is another instruction in between, then the value will have to be from over here, the write back stage. So we can send this value there as well. We can forward this value. Okay. The annotation stay. So clear all drawings. Okay, so that's what we call forwarding. Okay. So these registers, register 9 and 8, the values are stored in that pipeline register between the decode and the execute. And the old value is the R9 being 900, but we already added the previous two values. So we have that new value in this other pipeline register between the execute and the back. So if we do this forward from... We pass instead of passing the value from the register file, we pass the value from the pipeline register, then we can mitigate that data hazard. And by the way, how do we do this forward? Do we just connect the wires? What happens if we take 64 wires and we physically connect with other 64 wires? What will happen? Like we're getting 64 wires from here, from the register file, another 64 wires from over here, from this other pipeline register. If we connect them just like that together, we have a register that's driven from two different sources, and that's not legal, meaning that will give us a short. If we'll have one source driving a zero, another one driving a one, that's a short. So, you know, we need a way to select from where does the value come? What do we do for that? Or how do we select the value? We use a multiplexer, exactly. Yes, thank you. So we put a multiplexer and we need to know how to control that multiplexer. So we can have a multiplexer in both of them because, you know, we can have the different register, the other register that needs to be controlled. So ideally we want to be able to forward values to either of the registers, and that's why we have that. And here's an exercise. What should be the logic that controls that mux? So we learned a bit about this convention of in HCL how we represent the pipeline registers. We have this uppercase and lowercase. So the mux by default, this one is the default, it will get register output A. So register output A by default will go into the pipeline register. But unless this, when this condition is true, it will get the eval E. So it will get this value from right here. The input to this register that comes from the execute stage. So the condition could be A, B, C, D, E, and maybe take a few seconds, think about which one is the right answer. More time? Should we try to answer? Try to solve it? What's up? Yeah, you have a question?
Oh, you asked the time.
You want more time?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's try to. It's a little tricky, right? So who thinks it's A? No clue. I think maybe no clue is the most popular answer. B, C. Oh, okay, you guys got it. It's great. D, and something else. So we're trying to detect the hazard itself, right? So when do we pass this value from here, from this register? So when do we want to pass the value from the execute stage back into that register? When we have a hazard, when we have a data hazard. So when do we have a data hazard? Well, when we are writing to a register and at the same time also we're reading from it, right? Which is what this says, right? So we are register source A, we are reading from register source A, and we're also writing to it. And when that happens, if we draw the cycle time and stages, that is exactly coincides with the. Am I correct, Charles?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So this is a capital W. So it comes from, so we're writing to the to these registers. This would be correct if there would be if this would be correct if there would be another instruction in between. Yeah. So the timing doesn't work. Let's try to also cover. You have a question? Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So for B, like, that means that's the things come out of the wavelengths, and the E that's the means that the thing going to the wavelengths.
So for B, let's go again. So W. Destination E is that is the value here, no? From the right back to the
So it's not the thing from the app.
Oh, this is so yeah, no, actually I'm entirely wrong, yes. Execute to write back. So execute, execute to destination, execute destination E, that will be coming from execute to write. And this will be the value here. And when this value is the same as what we are reading from, then that matches exactly the timing of our data hazard. While this is the other side, right? So the capital W is the output, and that is the other side of this pipeline register. And this would be one clock cycle later. So if we are, and it's still a useful check, because sometimes we want to be able to pass this value there. So if we want to pass this value, then we will be using this condition here. While if we want to pass this value, then we will use this other condition here, C.
What is the difference between the upper line and the lower?
You mean between B and C? It's a big difference. Yes. Yeah. So they are one clock cycle delayed. So how does a register work? You pass an input, and at the next clock cycle, that value will be at the output. It's a register.
Yeah.
So the register holds a value.
I mean the line coming out of them at ALU and the line coming from all the way from like the yellow.
Oh, you mean this line versus this line? So this is the result of the addition. While that is, remember when we decode, we get that. That is where are we writing? That is an index. Where
and
are we writing?
We should use the line comes from the add ALU.
What do you mean? You mean we should use it from here?
Okay.
Of course. Also, we are out of time. Thanks, guys. So I can go ahead.
If you want the value, it should be this line. Right? And yeah. Like, what is
the value? But this is the
but for the condition, we need the destination instead of value. We see like the destination is like the first destination.
Yeah, that's right. But we want that line of value.
Oh, right.
Have the value here.
So the condition is the index of destination and we use the value.
And then
if the condition
is sure, like an instruction, you made them, of
course.
Yes,
we're taking longer than expected. And we also, very well, we also destroyed the entire system.
What?
So eventually, lower this is input from in upper register.
Yes. Yes.
So which registers are bulletin and which registers are PFB?
Yeah.